Good morning. It's good to see everybody out. We're going to park here in Psalms 23 for the next few weeks. We'll go elsewhere as well, kind of look at how Psalms 23, how that scripture kind of shows up in other portions of the Bible as well. That song, last week we went to the singing at Little Kansas and sang for about 3.5 days. But during that singing, that song was led, and this doesn't mean anything to anybody, but there are tent poles out there, and I would say for me, like I know in December, I'm probably going to preach about the birth of Christ, and I know in the springtime, I'm going to teach about the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. But aside from those two things, it's kind of just wide open on what do we talk about, what do we look at. And so for me, after one of those things happens, I'm kind of lost, like what do we do? And so we kind of talked about things that keep you up at night last week. This week we're going to look at the 23rd Psalm, and I think we're going to stay there for just a little bit. I think there are times, certainly for me, I think all of us go through times where we wonder, is God really good? Now, we don't talk about that very much in here, right? We don't bring up those kind of thoughts when we're sitting in a pew. But if we're honest, if I'm honest with you, there have been times in my life when I've wondered, is God really good? And if he is good, then why, when I look around everywhere, am I surrounded by so much bad? When I look around, why does it feel so hard to sing about the goodness of God? And it's like sometimes life can hand you so many lemons that there is no amount of sugar that you can make lemonade with. I think all of us have been there. That there's just so much going on that the sourness just sticks around. And it's during those times, it's really hard to proclaim the goodness of God, much less praise him for it. And I cannot be the only one who's been there. And I know I'm not the only one who said or wondered, I know that God is good, but is he really? And maybe you're in one of those seasons right now where you can't figure out what God is doing. You can't understand why he's not doing something that you know would be so right, that would prove his goodness, that this would be the perfect moment for God to step in and show the world who he really is, and yet he doesn't. And for a lot of people in moments like that, that they lose their faith and they walk away from God. And so this morning, I want to start talking about the goodness of God, and I want to start in a familiar place, in Psalms 23. If you grew up in this congregation and you had Wanda in class, you would memorize Psalms 23 during that two-year period in class. It's one of the most quoted scriptures of all the Bible. It's a psalm that's been the hope for so many people in the middle of life's mess. It's been the psalm that's helped people who've been wondering, is God really good? There's no mystery why Psalms 23 is read at funerals. It's in that moment when our loved one has just died that you're grasping to believe in the goodness of God. And so Psalm 23 is a psalm of hope. It's a message for those of us living in the middle of the mess. When life is hard, when it doesn't feel like things are going that great, Psalms 23 kind of cuts in and says it may not be going that good, but there's still hope. There's still beauty. There's still mercy. Now, a lot of scholars believe that when David wrote this psalm, that he was on the run. And some think it was early on when Saul was chasing him. I believe that it's the second time that David ran, when his own son Absalom has staged a coup to try and overtake the throne. And David didn't want to fight his own son. And so he runs. His life's in danger. Everything's a mess. Again, his own son wants him dead. People are refusing to harbor him. He's been the king for years. And now he's being shunned. So that's the situation. David's world is falling apart. And he sits down and he writes, "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want." And when I hear "I shall not want," I really used to think I don't desire anything. Like what I want for Christmas, right? But the phrase is deeper than that. It's an old English way of saying I am not in need. I lack nothing. So this morning, show of hands, can you say that this morning? Can you say right now that I lack nothing? Is there nothing in your life that you could change in order to feel safe, secure, or satisfied? Of course. Of course there are things that you want to be different. But is there anything that truly needs to change in order for you to proclaim, "I lack nothing"? How could David of all people at this moment say this? When his life is in pieces, he's hiding in a cave, his own son is trying to kill him, when everything that he has built has been ripped out from under him, and yet he writes, "I lack nothing." I imagine the people around David were thinking, "Really? Because I got a few needs, David. I could use a warm meal. I could go back to the palace that you built, not your son. Let's go back. Let's not pretend that everything is great out here, David." But David says, "I lack nothing." And you say, why? And I think it's because of what he said first, that the Lord is my shepherd. And you can only say the second part if the first part is true. You can only lack nothing if the Lord is your shepherd. And so he continues. He says, "He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters." And we'll pause right here. All I know, maybe all some of you know about sheep, is from a guy who stands behind one of these things and talks. Most of what I know about sheep come from church metaphors and not farm experience. But here's the thing. What do sheep normally do in green pastures? Right? They eat a lot, right? So if they're lying down, that means they're full. They're completely satisfied. And the same is true with still waters. What do sheep do at still water? They drink, right? They're not going to go by rolling water and try to drink that. So if they're by still waters, they stop to drink. But not these sheep. They're not thirsty. David's saying, "I've eaten enough grass to nap in it, and I've drank enough water that I can walk right by it." He's not saying, "I'm satisfied because I've ate and I've drank." He's saying, "I'm satisfied because the Lord is my shepherd, and he's led me to these places of abundance, wherever those places may be." And then he says, "He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows." And over the next few weeks, we'll go into that a little bit more. But for this morning, just listen to this closing line. "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." And that word "follow" in Hebrew, I think we do it a real disservice. It's better translated as "pursue," and it's even better translated as "haunt." David is saying, "I cannot escape God's goodness. I cannot outrun his mercy, even in my misery. God is back there turning it into something beautiful." Why, David? Because the Lord is my shepherd. And when the Lord is your shepherd, he can't help but be good. He can't help but be merciful. That's who he is. And wherever you go, if he is your shepherd, his goodness and his mercy follows. They pursue. They haunt. They stay. They never leave. Now the Christian joy, our true joy, should come from this one simple thing. And I know we talk about it, but we don't always live like it's true. And so if you're feeling anxious or unhappy, or if joy just feels out of reach, you need to remember joy is found in one thing and one thing only. And that's the presence of the shepherd. When the Lord is your shepherd, you have everything you need. And if you think that joy is going to come from changing your circumstance, I've got some bad news for you. I think we've all been there. And here's what I've learned is that lonely and insecure single people oftentimes become lonely, insecure married people. And they think, if I just get married, I'm not going to feel so alone. But they're still lonely. They're still insecure. They just got a new label, right? And sometimes, let's be honest, they become married and miserable because they were already miserable before. And the same is true for money. So some people think, if I just had more money, if I could just get out of debt, if I could just get a raise, then I could be content. But statistically speaking, we know that rich people are some of the most bitter and unhappy people walking this earth. We know this is a fact. We live in one of the most wealthiest nations in the world, and yet we are surrounded by some of the most bitter, angry, and miserable people that you'll ever meet. Now, are there good people? Sure. But overall, we suffer from discontentment. It reminds me of the great American philosopher Jim Carrey, what he once said. I wish everybody could get rich and famous so they could see that it's not the answer. Now Jim Carrey said this during a dark time in his life. He had everything in the world that I would imagine could make somebody happy, but he realized it didn't. The land of no needs is not found on planet Earth. It's not on any pasture, on a map. It's only found in the presence of the Good Shepherd. And so again, if you're anxious or afraid or unhappy, and you think your life is just going to get better if one thing changes, if you've given up on God changing it because maybe you felt prayers have been unanswered, then I want you to hear this morning. It is possible still for your life to be filled with goodness and mercy. It is possible to fear nothing. It is possible to have your cup overflow, but only when the Lord is your shepherd. Only when you're walking with him, not just on weekly visitations on Sundays, right? But truly living with him in his presence. To live a life where you lack nothing takes faith. And it takes deep faith. Because when your life feels like it's lacking and your heart feels empty, when your prayers feel ignored, it does take extra faith to say, I still lack nothing because I have Jesus. Now, I think a really smart writer is a guy by the name of Dallas Willard. You may have read some of his writings. He did a book on Psalms 23. And what he did was they took that book and his lessons and compared Psalms 23 to the experience of Job. And I'm going to kind of borrow that this morning because I think Dallas Willard's right. He said that Job walked through three different kinds of faith. And these reflect our journey too. So real quickly, we'll just walk through them. The first is the faith of propriety. And that's the idea that if I live right, if I obey God, then God will bless me. This is where Job starts. The text tells us that Job was a righteous man, that he feared God, that he lived right, and because of that, God blessed him. His family was thriving, his land was blessed, he was healthy and prosperous. The kind of faith isn't wrong to have. In fact, it's a big theme throughout the book of Proverbs. If you follow God, blessings will follow. And a lot of us here today have experienced that. But here's the thing. It's not always like that, right? Because what happens next in Job's story is the thing, same thing that happens to a lot of us. The blessings get taken away, not because of something Job did wrong, not because he sinned, not even because God was punishing him, but because God is testing his faith. And so Satan challenges God and says, Job only serves you because you've blessed him. If we take all that away, he'll curse you. And so God allows it, and Job loses everything. And so that leads us to the second kind of faith, and that's the faith of desperation. This is when nothing makes sense. You've done what's right, but your life is still falling apart anyway. You're praying. I mean, you're either just getting a busy signal or no answer at all. You're obeying, but your blessings aren't coming. You're hurting. You've got his faith. Job expresses it best, I think, in Job 13, 15. He says, though he, meaning God, though God slay me, yet I will trust in him. That's the faith of desperation. I don't get it. I don't like it. I don't understand it. But I still trust him. Most of us, we don't ever reach that level of faith because as soon as things start going wrong, we split, right? Because a lot of us just stick with the faith of propriety. If I do good, God will bless me. But the faith of desperation says, I still believe in God, that he's good, even when I can't see a single reason why. Willard makes the point to say, often God allows us to reach the point of desperation so we can learn how to trust. That's a hard lesson. I think it's an essential lesson. The life without lack is known by those who have learned to trust God in the moment of their need. Not before that moment, not after that moment, but in the moment when everything else is gone. That's where you discover the reality of God. But there's one more level of faith. And I think this is where Psalms 23 really takes root. And it's the faith of sufficiency. This is the faith that says, I'm content. I'm at peace. I lack nothing because I have God. It's a quiet faith. It's a resting faith. It's a faith that lies down in green pastures. It walks beside still waters. It's the faith that says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Now, you remember all throughout the book of Job, Job is protesting and he's saying things like, I don't deserve this. If I could just talk to God, I would explain. Over and over, Job says, I just need an audience with God and I could make my point. And eventually God does show up. And it's a pretty cool line. When he does, he speaks out of the whirlwind. And God says, who is this that darkens the counsel with words without knowledge? Can't think of many scarier things to hear God ask you. And then God goes on for chapters, questioning Job, teaching Job, showing Job his power, his wisdom, his greatness. And when Job finally gets his audience he's begged for, Job does not argue. He doesn't complain. He doesn't even ask his questions. He sits there silent because in that moment, he realizes something. He is lacking nothing. Not because his life is better, not because he gets his kids back, not because he gets his health restored, but because the God who stores the snow in its seasons, who's carved the oceans, who holds the universe in his hand, that God is with Job. And if that God is still with us, then truly, what am I lacking? The faith of sufficiency, that's what David had when he wrote, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now here's the truth. You can only learn the faith of sufficiency by living in the presence of the God of goodness. Every single day. When again, we don't get that kind of faith by just coming here once a week. We don't develop that kind of faith by only opening our Bibles when times are hard. You learn the faith of sufficiency by walking with your shepherd. Again, not just on Sundays, but on every single day. Because if your faith is just limited to Sunday mornings, that's a faith of propriety. If I go to church, God ought to bless me this week. But what happens if he doesn't? What happens when your Monday blessings are taken away? Do you run away from God, or do you run to God? David said, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And so maybe that's what you need today. Maybe you're too in a time where everything feels broken. Maybe you've wandered off from the flock. Maybe you've been content with just a little bit of God and not all of him in your life. I say, here's the good news. The shepherd is still calling. He's still calling you back. Jesus says, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." And so if you're tired or you're burdened or you feel worn out from trying to carry all of this life on your own, I say come to the shepherd. He is good. He is merciful. You will lack nothing when you are living in his presence. And so this invitation is for anyone this morning. If you need prayers or encouragement, or if you're ready to take steps into baptism, to walk in the newness of life, the baptismal waters are prepared as well. Whatever your need may be, please come as together we stand and we sing.